those of you who don't know me, I'm Nick Altamirano of Merritt City, North Adams. I have the pleasure of welcoming you all here today. A very special welcome to Governor Michael Dukakis and his wife Kitty, and to Governor William Weld and his wife Leslie. Thank you very much for being with us today. Before I begin, I just want to thank a few folks. Made this a special event today. I think they should be recognized. Freyer Club for our refreshments. No City Productions, thank you very much for sharing the stage with us. Massmoker, thank you for setting up this great production here in this environment. T&M Automotive and Bex Printing for all you did in a very short period of time to help us out with this. So thank you all very much. Know how that I have been much further than knee-deep in redevelopment efforts for this park since coming into office. I've said that Heritage Park is an incredible asset, but the potential within the boundaries of this historic location, its connection to our industrial past, its connection to our railroad, its connection, its relevance to this city, have never been fully realized. In just a few minutes, I can honestly say that what you are about to see and hear can significantly transform this park in a way that has tremendous cultural and even more so economic potential, while fully respecting the historic relevance of this great asset. This concept, much like Massmoka, can be a game changer for this city and for this greater region. The new plan envisions a North Adams-Williamstown cultural corridor that will solidify this city as a cultural, educational, and economic destination for many, many years. And what you're about to hear parallels the city's Vision 2030 master plan, as well as the economic development strategy that was presented by the North Adams Partnership in 2014. I am honored to have with us today for this presentation former Governors Michael Dukakis and William Weld, as well as Tom Krenz and Richard Gluckman, who bring a deep connectivity to our past and a renewed and significant commitment to our future. I'd like to first introduce Governor Dukakis to come up and speak briefly. During his administration in the early 1980s, as the Commonwealth's 65th governor, Governor Dukakis proposed and funded the creation of the statewide heritage parks concept. And then in the late 1980s, his administration supported and provided the initial funding for Massmoka. Governor Dukakis is no stranger to this city, and quite honestly probably knows more people in this room than I do. So with that, I'd like to have Governor Dukakis.
Just a joy for Kitty and me to be here, a part of the state that we've loved for a long, long time, and be joined by my former young legal associate, Bill Weld. And that was a long time ago, and his wife Leslie before he became governor. And I don't want to go on a great length to give an ex-politician a microphone and let him shut up. Some of you may recall North Adams was really hurting badly. And frankly, folks, we had tried everything, and nothing seemed to be working. And I finally did what? Created a task force, and I asked John DeRosa and the then president of North Adams State College, as we call it, to head up that task force, to back us for 4 or 5 months and tell us what we ought to do, because we just went out of ideas. And I'll never forget time. On this very hot summer day in North Adams, must be 97 in the shade. On a Friday, because I used to plan my summer weeks on a Friday, so I'd end up in the Berkshires, and Kitty would meet me, and we'd spend time with her dad, who, as you know, was with Symphony and had a little house in Tierney. And John brought me into this very small room in the Williams College Art Museum, and this big guy showed up. Practically filled up the room. I had a long week that week, Tom, and I was getting a little sleepy. And he began telling me about the possibilities of taking the Sprague Mills and turning them into a world-renowned museum of contemporary art in North Adams. Well, I'm a man of faith. So I brought his proposal back and gave to my development people, and the rest of this is history. But as many of you know, I'm also a rail fanatic. My one regret today is that I wasn't able to take a passenger train through the Hoosier Tunnel and avoid having to drive out here for 3 hours. And in point of fact, Bill and I have teamed up in a very serious effort to finally connect North and South Station by rail. We feel that strongly. It's a very special day when John DeRosa, this past summer, said to me, I want to share you something. Because I've been very frustrated with the Heritage Park program, and especially with this one, which, as you know, was created to celebrate railroad memorials because of the history of this city and of this region when it comes to railroading. And when John first told me about the ideas that Tom had, especially doing what you'll be hearing about and seeing about in a few minutes, I was really excited. I mean, I think this is terrific. I think we've got great opportunities here, and all I can tell you, Tom, and Dick, and everybody, is that I'm tickled to death. Look forward to following the progress of this. Needless to say, to be out here, you know, we come out often, as you know. And just want to congratulate everybody for making all of this happen, especially Tom, who's really been the inspiration behind it. So thanks for having us. Thanks for doing this. And we look forward to spending some good hours with you today, taking a look at something that's going to be very exciting. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Governor. Governor Wells, the Commonwealth's 68th governor, who once again is no stranger to the city of North Adams. In 1991, worked with the state legislature and the private sector to create the blueprint and economic model that led to full public and private sector funding for Mass Local. His commitment to North Adams and this plan is significant. Governor Weld?
Thank you very much, Mayor. I must say it's a particular pleasure to be here today because it feels like old times in 1991 when Dan Bosley and John Barrett persuaded me that the idea for Mass Mocha was so counterintuitive that it probably would have a good chance of working. It just went such Kuzavinsky and Tanglewood. And it was wonderful running around in those days with Jennifer and Joe Thompson and Tom Krenz and seeing the flesh be put on the bones and what has turned out to be a spectacular investment by the state, with more coming, thanks to Governor Patrick recently. So this current pair of projects that we're here to talk about today, the Extreme Model Railroad installation here and the Global Contemporary Museum by the airport, really are, I think, going to knit together North County and be a perfect complement to Mass Mocha and to the Clark. These are projects, both of which are going to be financed, and there's not doubt about that. The Railroad Museum in Hamburg, Germany, which is similar to what's contemplated here, brings in 1 million visitors a year, which is triple the Clark and five times Mass Mocha, and we think we can do as well as Hamburg and even better. And give me a $600,000 a year revenue stream, and even I can find $10 million to finance development here in the Heritage Park. And you'll probably hear a little bit more about this from Tom, but the Global Contemporary Museum at the airport, in addition to bricks and mortar, the collection itself is privately financed, so there's no state money required there. And Tom will tell you a little bit about how the pieces that will fit in that museum will be acquired and arrayed. It's just very, very exciting. Dan Arbus, who's here, is intimately involved in the financing of that as well. The town fathers and mothers of North Adams are totally on board, not just John DeRosa and the mayor, whom we thank, but Duncan Brown and others have lined up to finance the master plan, which has brought us to this day. So it's always good to have the local citizenry solidly behind you. I personally think that today's news is broader even than North County and North Adams. I think it is another step in the road to realizing that the arts and culture offerings of Western Massachusetts are arguably superior to those east of Route 495. In addition to the outfits that we're talking about today, and there's more coming, we're on the march here. My friend Don Sanders, who's here, who is in charge of the Victory Theater in Holyoke, which is a 1,600-seat theater, even bigger than the 1,200-seat Mohawk, which we're going to talk about today. That's real culture, and Don is a programmer, and I think can fit in to complement. He's a Pioneer Valley guy, or as I like to say, as the author of Stillwater, the town of the story of the four towns that were flooded, the Swift River Valley. But his reach extends to New York and out here as well. And I look forward to trying to see those forces work together. So I think it's a great day for Western Mass, a great day for Massachusetts, great day even for New York. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Governor, for those comments. Tom Krenz is the Director Emeritus of the Solomon Guggenheim Foundation in New York City and was the first chairman of MassMOCA. Tom has been developing this new plan and program since early this year with the assistance of both governors, my office, Gluckman Tang, architects based in New York City, and our good friend and community partner, you've heard his name a few times this morning, John DeRosa. It has been an amazing journey, Tom, to work with you on this wonderful plan. Tom?
My friends, the governors, indeed, there's a, I suppose, a bit of deja vu that comes into this from time to time. As you can see from this image that's on the screen, I'm going to be now talking about trying to show you what we're doing. But this was at MassMOCA in 1988 when Michael Dukakis was essentially signing something that committed the state to, and I, believe it or not, I'm the taller guy on the left. And as Governor Weld pointed out, Joe Thompson was the founding director of MassMOCA, and when Joe and Michael Govan is now the director of L.A. County Museum, were students of Maya Williams, that's when the concept for MassMOCA hatched. So this kind of current thinking has some deep roots. Of course, you know, things change. I grew a beard, got a little heavier. Governor Wells showed up bringing checks, giving them to anybody on the street. I'm not sure. He's a politician. He was passing out money. And then, of course, Governor Patrick and the recent grant for MassMOCA was clearly guarantees that its forward momentum that Joe has so heroically sustained is going to be going on for some time. I'm going to tell you a little bit about how I got here. I mean, I wasn't entirely enthusiastic about this in the beginning. And I have, I've been in New York for 25 years, and I've been coming back to Williamstown from time to time because I still had a home here. And gradually, it dawned on me as I saw what was happening at MassMOCA. Certainly, I thought that the Stall of Wit installation and the collaboration with Yale University and the LeWitt Estate was one of the heroic moments for MassMOCA, kind of like that indicated it would be there for a while. And then when Andy Hall and the Hall Foundation did the other building with Anselm Kiefer, that sort of set the ground for the new $25 million grant and commitments to those artists. So you could clearly see that the ship was rising. And at the same time, I was very close to Michael Conforti and the Clark Art Institute. I think I probably toured the construction site more than anybody else who was not on the staff. And my former project manager at the Guggenheim, Jessica Ludwig, was the project manager for the reopening of the Clark. So I had kind of an insider's view. And I think the Clark was a spectacular success. I mean, it became a major, major institution. And not that it wasn't, but it was way, way more now. And you could just see that this place actually was an interesting place for sophisticated art. And up until this moment, this about a year ago, I've been working for 7 years mainly in China. And I'm not going to go into my China projects or why I finally got beaten down by China. It had a little bit to do with traveling there once a month. You know, that's a 25-hour trip one way. It's a 12-hour time change. You stay there for 3 or 4 days and you come back. It completely is a disorienting and exhausting thing to do month after month after month after month for almost 7 years. And I thought, well, why not try to do it here? And I was thinking primarily, and it's still in my mind, you know, perhaps even the most important project is the project at the airport. And I'm going to show you that. But I then began, as I started to think about the project at the airport, being in North Adams, John DeRosa introduced me to Mayor Alkenbright, and they heard some noise in my house and asked what it was. And I said, well, I was building a prototype for a museum in China of an extreme model railroad with contemporary architecture. And I took the mayor to see the prototype. And well, after that, it was Heritage Park. I mean, John particularly was pounding me on Heritage Park. We have to do it, you have to do it here. So gradually, as the spring came, I started riding my bicycle around Heritage Park and out to the Hoosick Tunnel, and started to look more and more at North Adams, and I began to see that there might be something here, because this was a project. Heritage Park was originally a project of Governor Dukakis, and these buildings were quite extraordinary. So a certain thinking developed, and I'm going to try to take you through that thinking, a very candid thinking, which is that, or I'm going to be candid here, which is that, you know, North Adams, as we know, is the smallest city in Massachusetts. It's hard to imagine North Adams without Massmoca, but Massmoca has not been the silver bullet that maybe some of us might have hoped 30 years ago. It hasn't transformed everything. Massmoca's hit its original targets, but it's not enough, and there hasn't been a spillover effect to the rest of the city. And there are reasons for this. You know, people come from South County, they come from all over, they go to Massmoca, they leave, they're not staying. We have to give them more reasons to stay in North Adams. That's part of it. And, you know, gradually the numbers don't lie that the economy and population have continued to contract over this last 25 years, and we have to stop that and reverse that. There are only two hotels in North Adams, and Joe told me that the future of Massmoca depends on the future of North Adams. So something has to be done to enhance the city. So that's the reality. The potential is that Massmoca has received this $25 million grant. Massmoca has an attendance of 180,000 people, the Clark around 320, and Williams College is going to announce plans for a new museum, Williams College Museum of Art, designed by Stephen Hall. You know, all of this, these are major institutions, as Governor Ruelt has pointed out, that could certainly challenge virtually any region in the country. And I made this little map, which said this is what the valley looks like right now. You know, you have the institutions I mentioned, plus the Regional Conservation Lab and the Williamstown Theater Festival, but you can see that this is a little bit imbalanced. I mean, it's more tilting toward Williamstown and North Adams, and we have to change that with a new vision. So the vision is North Adams and the state of Massachusetts have to embrace the notion that culture and education are primary industries, and that we develop a concept of a cultural corridor that identifies and brands this valley. And to accomplish this growth in a more balanced relationship, North Adams needs at least, we believe, three attractions, one of which is already in place, which is the Mohawk Theater. So if we were to combine the thinking on the global contemporary, the Extreme Model Railroad Museum, and the revitalization of the Mohawk Theater, all of a sudden, you know, the valley looks like this, you know, with the global contemporary being a fulcrum in the middle, but a cluster of cultural institutions that will clearly make this a destination. People will stay here longer, not just come up and see the Clark and Massmoca and leave. I think it'll kind of spur and inspire developers to speculate about more hotels, encourage business, et cetera, et cetera. But we're in the process of studying that, and we will be reporting on that at the end of the month. You know what North Adams looks like, I won't go into that, but strengthening this kind of triangle, cultural triangle, in the heart of the city by developing Heritage Park connecting to Massanoka, and then the Mohawk Theater, I think is going to be very important. So first, the Global Contemporary Museum. I'm going to go through this very quickly because Richard's going to talk about the building. This is a theoretical experiment to a certain extent. It's deeply rooted in my thinking about art museums. And I also wanted to do a museum that was extremely beautiful and extremely efficient, was the, as we like to call it, WLEM, the world's least expensive museum. It's a concrete slab, it's almost a Butler building, but a building designed with sophistication and elegance and flooded with natural light with these big skylights that are 24 feet high that face the north. And I'm even thinking, I don't know if it works out to be practical, I don't want to have any lights in this building at all. So it's kind of like ecologically balanced, as if there's daylight outside and that daylight is flooding into the spaces and you can come in and see the art, that's good. And if it gets dark at 3 o'clock, as it does in the winter, then the museum closes. So the hours might be flexible a little bit like that. But the spaces are extraordinary, big, wide, open spaces. Richard's going to talk about it. It's on the property right next to the airport, next to Stop and Shop. And I also might point out that the Massachusetts Department of Transportation has a program on the table to build an administration building for the airport on the airport site. $4 million from the state only requires a $200,000 match from the city, and that could virtually happen. So if that happens, if the Global Contemporary and the Mass DOT administration building and two restaurants and lots of parking, it itself becomes an attraction in North Adams. And for those people who have private planes and want to fly in to look at the art, that's always an option. The concept behind the Global Contemporary, I think, is important. I've always said, even at the beginning of my involvement with museums, that art museums were an 18th century idea, the idea of the encyclopedia, in a 19th century box, which was the extended palace, that more or less fulfilled its structural destiny sometime toward the end of the 20th century. This basically means that art museums cannot continue to collect because the Guggenheim is 20,000 objects and it's only 70 years old. When it's 150, what's it going to do with its 160,000 objects or 100,000 objects? It doesn't have the space to handle them. So new models have to be invented, and particularly for contemporary art. There's more contemporary art of great quality than ever before that simply is not being seen. It might debut once in a gallery, it might go to a collector, it largely goes into storage. And what we're talking about is building large, efficient, inexpensive exhibition space that would showcase a whole new echelon of contemporary art, and it would fit perfectly between what Massanoka is doing with Artists in Depth and what the Clark is doing. And our idea is that this would be entirely privately financed because there are people who are interested in building collections and seeing those collections on display. And that concept will be further rolled out as we go along. To give you a taste of what the art might look like, this is just very quick. I'm not even going to talk about it, but the idea is that we would be taking stuff that you can't basically see but once and aggregate it in a group of works by that artist. Imagine the Andy Hall Anson Kiefer times 10 or 12. I mean, that's basically what it is. And Andy Hall and the Hall Foundation are a perfect paradigm of the demand that's sitting out there. I mean, Andy Hall could do 50 of those buildings just based on his collection. And where's the rest of everything? It's mainly in storage. So we're thinking that there's a demand for this type of thing. We're thinking that as we try to develop this concept and present it, we can see that it's definitely possible to do. And this could be a perfect location for it, because it would be too expensive simply to try to do this in a large metropolitan area. That brings us to the Railroad Museum. I want to also direct your attention that after this presentation, the Global Contemporary storyboards are on this side of the room to my left. To my right are the storyboards for the the Extreme Model Railroad Museum. And in the back are more detail about the Extreme Model Railroad Museum. And there are two models that I brought, a Frank Gehry model and a Zaha Hadid model. Richard brought one of his up from New York to give you an idea of the type of architecture that would be integrated into this massive, you know, train layout display. And this takes a little explanation. This is the entrance. I mean, you're actually sitting in this building that is kind of under probably the railroad sign, the sign itself that says railroad. But there's a new entrance, obviously, that comes from the courtyard. You can see in this plan, the gray areas are the existing buildings, and the orange areas are the new construction that would have to take place. And that odd shape is basically a function of meeting the fire code requirements of being able to have the fire truck go between the one end of the building and the other, and still has to respect the boundaries of the building and the wall. So it forced us in to think about something unusual, which was an extra long building. This building is 670 feet long that we're envisioning. You know, that's more than two football fields. Another way of thinking about that is that, you know, the large gallery at Massmoca is 2.5 times the large gallery at Massmoca in its length. So it'd be a big experience, I mean, once you get into this building. And you can see the railroad layout here, the train architecture layout is in the gray, the light gray. You walk into the, where did I put my, my light wand over here. You walk into the atrium. Over there, all of the gray around here is the train installation, if we call it. And then over here in the back, where there are freight cars now, we probably remove the freight cars and bring three dining cars and make a dining car restaurant on that site, right next to the tracks. So you could actually go to that restaurant and look out the window and see the trains kind of like passing by if you're there when the trains pass by. As I said, what this would look like, this is a rendering that Richard's team has put together from basically a photograph from the roof of the Holiday Inn. So you can see the overpass. This is where the building ends right now, and it would extend in this direction, almost to the boundary of Building 6, which is the far building of the Heritage Park complex. You can see a real train kind of like passing by. A couple of points about this is that this is not kind of like Tom's Trains in the Basement type of concept. To tell you the truth, I had nothing really to do with model trains. I bought my older son, Nick, when he was 4, you know, Lionel trains that we basically did nothing with for 16 years. So they were there in the basement. And then about 3.5 years ago, I was thinking about museums, and I thought that I'm famous for doing the Art of the Motorcycle show at the Guggenheim. I mean, it was only one of 300 that I did, but I'm still famous for it. And the idea of kind of bringing these objects of popular culture into a museum context and presenting them with a sophistication and elegance has always stayed with me. And the idea of doing this is actually, it's relatively cost efficient. Because I had to do three exhibitions a year at the Guggenheim. I didn't do an exhibition for less than $2 million. And then 3 times a year, you put it up for 3 months, you tore it down, and then you put up another one. So the idea for me, in one of my big projects in China, was to put this train museum as one of the galleries, and it could be up for 10 years, and it would justify its operating expense. Anyway, that was the concept. So I decided that the only way I could do this, to understand it, was to build a prototype. And that's how this started. I built a prototype in the basement. But I began to imagine that it was more like a theme park, a very, very sophisticated theme park for people from ages 4 to 104. And it was based on a Disney Imagineering concept, I mean, how Disney goes about thinking about theme parks. And, you know, we wanted to establish this type of experience, enhance the cultural corridor profile, create a new audience, generate investment, I mean, all of the things. I took some notes on this. You know, this would include the history of North Adams. It would be extreme landscaping, what I call extreme model railroading. And if you want to know what I mean, after this press conference is over, you go back and you look at the boards over on that far wall. Every single one of those images is a model train or a model setup. They look real. It looks like it was a photograph that was taken from someplace. They are all models. And it's that level of extreme detailing, that extreme modeling, that goes into the title of Extreme Model Railroad. So there are four components, and I'm almost done with this now. There are four components, and the key component was actually the trains. What I found out when I looked into this about 4 years ago was that the trains used to be toys. These are no longer toys. This is a Union Pacific Challenger, and there's a company in Michigan that does extreme research to be able to make an exact model replica. And it's an operating O scale, but these are operating computers. They can be programmed to do virtually anything. I mean, they can program for scale speed. They have all kinds of sounds attached to it. You can program the tracks. You can avoid collisions. I mean, they are amazing devices. And they're only manufactured in editions of 100. And you have to sort of get on the list to do this. And they probably cost between $6,000 and $10,000 a piece. But as I say, they're not toys. And I actually have one here. I'll put one out after the press conference and you can see it. But it's these trains, these exquisite models, that testify to the level of detail and realism that we're going to try to achieve. So these are the models and these are what the trains look like. As I said, these are all now models of trains. These are, and all of the landscaping and every detail about this is a model. It's not a photograph of an actual train. And this is what our model trains essentially would look like. That extreme modeling extends into the landscaping. This is a model landscape. And there are, we have identified the best in the world at this, what I call the high practitioners, the 5 to 10 elite model makers who seem to have devoted their life to this sort of thing. But they are the, this is the inspiration for the type of quality that we're going to try to build into this. Yes, even the water gets modeled out of a kind of plastic composite. So this is an art, actually. It's an art form to be able to do this. This is a model, believe it or not. And we'll also be able to control the light and the times of day. I think that this layout has something like 400,000 lights on it. You can see the mayor referred to, or Governor Weld referred to, this installation in Hamburg, Germany. I think ours would be infinitely better, but I won't tell you why. But they get 1.2 million visitors a year to see this. And they even model crowd scenes. Can you believe that? I mean, those are actually little models of people. So there's the technology exists, is what I'm trying to say. And I believe that we can do this. And we can also build cities. And one of the reasons I was attracted by this building is that it had 16-foot heights. And our addition would probably go up to 30 feet. But we'd be able to model in true scale, urban downtown of New York City, for example. And you can control, as I said, you can control the time and the daylight. And one of the great model makers, actually, in the world, one of that elite seven, is the singer Rod Stewart. This is his work. And you can see his commitment to detail. Our commitment to detail, we're taking on the modeling of Grand Central Station right now, which is a big project. It has to be kind of like mapped out by computer and made by a 3D printer and a laser cutter, right down to the detail of the sculpture on the top. And then there's a contemporary architecture piece. This is an initial list of architects. I've worked with every one of them. And the two, when I started to do this concept, I called up Frank Gehry and I told him my son Nick was having his 21st birthday a couple of months, and that Frank was going to give him a model. I didn't ask for it. I told him that Nick's going to, Frank, you're going to give Nick a model. And that model is in the back. I mean, we put it on the table here to bring you to let you see what a kind of like an O scale 1 to 48 model of an actual building would be. Richard Gluckman brought a model in the 1 to 50 scale, and I also have one from Zaha Hadid, which I put on the back of the table so you can get a sense of what those models look like. But I think, the architecture list could grow, but if you start with this list, it's not bad. You probably have, you certainly have 6 Pritzker Prize winners, if that means anything. But this is probably a good summary of the sophisticated contemporary architecture profession. And that contemporary architecture leaps over to content of Mass MoCA. And, these are simply architects' models, and these models exist by the thousands, and we would negotiate the involvement of the architects for part of this. So this thing has the potential to become very exciting. And you get some idea of the scale of what that would be. So that's the architecture side, and then there's the historical side. You know, we could model North Adams in the 1940s, or the, you know, as part of position on the layout. You know, certainly starting with the Hoosick Tunnel. You know, the old train station in North Adams, Main Street in North Adams. This is the Wilson House Hotel, built in 1866, burned down in 1912. Another view of Main Street, another view of Main Street, and Main Street in the 1950s. So I think there's a commitment to try to restore some of this vigor by even creating this kind of like model prototype for developers to see what North Adams could be. I want to emphasize the technology. This would actually be the control room for the trains and would be part of the display. People would be able to come up to this bar that separates it and you know, almost feel that they were part of the operators. It would probably require 5 to 6 operators continuously, because we would probably do somewhere between 50 and 100 trains operating at a time. There would be a lot of activity, you know, many, many things for people to see. So the technology is extreme. The opportunities for training and engaging, we've already been in discussions with McCann and Drury High School and others about bringing, you know, getting students involved in this project. To build it, it's going to require about 60 people, and then to operate it and to run it as a museum is probably going to require 60 people. So this by itself would generate about 60 jobs. Of course, the audience attractors are the trains, the theme park complex, analog experience, the educational aspects. We would have, Richard will talk about this, but we'll have a whole bank of, one whole wall will be interactive computers that we'll have, will be programmed to focus on history of North Adams, contemporary architecture, the history of the biographies of all the architects, anything that you want to do. So it's clearly, if you come here, it would be a 2.5-hour experience to take it all in, with a couple of shopping opportunities and a couple of eating opportunities. It's quite an afternoon. And I believe it would bring a completely different audience from the audience that we have here right now, who come to look at the art. Anyway, I'm going to stop there. I'm going to move this all the way back to the beginning of the building, and I'm going to let Richard talk about the buildings, starting with the contemporary, the global contemporary. Okay. You just press that bottom button. Okay. This is it.
I'd like to thank Tom very, very much for that. Richard Gluckman is the principal in Gluckman Tang Architects, based in New York City. Richard has built an internationally recognized firm with a body of work that includes museums, educational institutions, retail, residential, and commercial projects. And what he has proposed to date, Richard, is simply incredible. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. One mayor, two governors, and one czar. Something's happening here. Here is not just North Adams. I've been hearing in the last couple of days about North County, South County, four counties. Excuse my lack of understanding of the geography, but I think the ramifications of these initiatives go way beyond the geography of northwestern Massachusetts. For 40 years, we've been involved in careful interventions into additions, making additions and interventions into historic buildings or historic sites. In this case, with each of these, the premise has been that the content and the context will yield a concept. However, in this case, it's been inverted. Mr. Krenz, who knows this area well, has developed the concept. We just get to design the buildings. It seems perfectly logical to us that the town would want to supplement, complement, exploit the cultural corridor that's been formed between North Adams and Williamstown, but I think could also be extended certainly a little bit further south. Before I get into the discussion about Heritage Park, I'd like to talk about this project here. As Tom mentioned it, we did internally christen it the least expensive museum building in the world. Basically, the strategy was to use extremely efficient and sort of the 21st version of the 19th century mill building, loft building, using a Butler-type building kit of parts. We're very as most architects won't tell you, we're very good at spending the client's money, sometimes even exceeding their expectations. But I've always been intrigued with low-budget projects. My very first project was the renovation of an early 20th century warehouse in New York City for the Diaz Center of the Arts, which cost $19 a square foot to open. That was followed by the Andy Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh, which was a renovation and an addition in the mid to late 90s. That cost $100 a square foot. More recently, the Musée Picasso Malaga, 8 buildings, new and old, the Dolphin Museum as well, two structures, a new building and an old structure, both cost $300 a square foot in their dollars. Now, we worked very hard on this project, and I think, as I said, we think of it as a 21st century model of an earlier industrial model. And working with VIP Structures in Syracuse, we worked with on the conversion of a warehouse, which took 9 months and cost $67 a square foot to open up at the School of Architecture. We came up with some good numbers, and the numbers are beneath $200 a square foot. I'm not going to say how much lower than they are, but they give me a level of comfort to say that we can achieve that. The building is a total of 165,000 square feet. And the upper left is a building about 30,000 square feet of fine art storage facility, which has a slightly higher degree of climate control than the rest of the museum will contain. Tom talks about no artificial lighting. I've always dreamed of doing an institution with no artificial lighting, but I think the fire marshals of the city of North Adams might not agree. But it will be primarily lit by natural light. Supplemental lighting, of course, the mechanical systems, the lighting, the air conditioning, and the structural systems will be very simple, industrial scale equipment that I think will keep the technology that's well known and well used today. Photovoltaics noted on the roof are not included in that budget, but I think that's something we would strive to see incorporated in one form or another, and that would more than take care of the electrical load. We came up with a 70-foot structural module, talking to several steel fabricators, finding out that that was one of the lightest, most efficient spans that we could achieve. The open inverting the trusses gives us a couple of different conditions that could have a ceiling added to it, but would partly conceal the mechanical equipment that would be above it. It's a concrete slab on grade. I would like to see it heated with radiant heat, and I think we can convince ourselves and the builders that in the long run that would lower, even though it might be a slightly higher capital cost, it would lower operating costs considerably and make it more comfortable for the visitors. We've left out some of the bays to create this inside-outside experience, capturing part of the site, which we think is... I feel very fortunate to be working on a railroad museum and a museum on an airport. We need to introduce ships somehow into this work. Most of this work can only, we have to reactivate the Erie Canal, I guess. Tom mentioned the proximity of the airport buildings. In some ways, the vocabulary, the sort of the lightweight vocabulary, both has a certain resonance with the hangars and our new structure and the new control building that's being considered. It's just out of sight on the right side of this picture here. Plans. There they are. And now let's go Tom.
Just keep on going.
Okay.
To the
back to North Adams.
Yeah.
There we go.
Faster.
Is that it?
No, I think you have to go faster.
Oh.
To get to, okay. That's
there. Right. Now this project, in some ways, is a logical extension of the master plan of 2013 that identified Heritage Park as one of the five sort of key assets that needs redevelopment in the city of North Adams. And this brings us to the second sort of component of the equation of context and content. And here, the content is something we all get. Model railroads. Lots of model railroads. 25,000, I'll come back to this in a second, 25,000 square feet of model railroads. So just to point out that the shaded area that's highlighted there is the space that we're standing in right now. This space is 3,000 square feet.
Actually, you highlighted 8,000 square feet, so we're only standing in about a third of it.
I'm sorry, you're right. Yeah. This space we're in right here is 3,000 square feet. The entire complex will be 32,000 square feet, including the railroad cars. But let's say, and 25,000 square feet of that will be the spaces that will be dedicated to just the train track systems. As Tom, this complex here is 25,000 square feet. As Tom mentioned, the building we're in now is right here. This is 100 feet long. This whole building is 670 feet long. We may be approaching 2 miles of the track. The building itself, let me go back a little bit. The building itself, we think, is, you know, this entrance atrium is where we're standing right now. It'll be facing, it'll be just through this wall here. I think it was an extrusion or expansion of the existing architecture of the site with a bit of a 21st century adjustment. We'll extend it, extrude it, tweak it slightly, but basically it will conform to what we think of as the Secretary of Interior standards for doing contemporary interventions or additions to historic buildings. We love this historic model. We love the technical aspects of it, the formal aspects of it, the color, the texture, the detail, and the extension of this building will have all of those characteristics, except we'll know that it's a 21st century building. We hope it's considered a complement to this 19th century structure. So this entrance sort of unfolds, opening up an atrium that provides access to mainly the railroad the display itself. Quickly identify, I think, the other buildings on the Heritage Park site, we're here. The railroad cars, the train cars will go here. This building here is where the pub is. These two buildings are occupied. It's considered that one will be a retail component for Massmoca, the other a retail component for the Railroad Museum. Distillery might move in here, and the North Adams Historic Society would still occupy this structure. Again, there's sort of a similar structural system that the new building, the roof will actually angle up so that we can provide more of a mezzanine. We want to get the public up above the transept so they can get a sense of the scale and depth and the entire experience and see it from above as well as from horizontal level. That's a very, very small bullseye target of the sort of the texture and depth of the train system itself. You've seen Tom has shown a lot of examples of what can be achieved, and the photographs of those are still on the wall. You capture part of the atrium here. It's split up on the boards, but the main entrance would be here from the south into the atrium, WCs, coat room, information. WCs over here is where there'd be separate access to the railroad cars here. Tom likes to say that, you know, he likes to turn this over to the architects. Occasionally he turns it over to the architects, but he always brings something with it. So he said, well, why don't we put a little room in here that just invert the viewer's point of view and push the viewer into the railroad display from the opposite side. You know, pretty good ideas that we eventually agree with. The view from the bridge, or the view from the top of City Hall over the bridge. This one, a little earlier in the stage, I think we've certainly taken a page of the Massmoca sign, which I think is one of the great graphics achievements that I've seen at a museum. I think that would work well here. Hope it doesn't create any traffic jams or accidents. This is actually a screenshot of a video that Tom took from the roof the other day of the train, of one of 16 trains that goes by every day. I would just say this, sort of the conceptualization of the color and the finish is derived from the existing buildings, but this is a very, very conceptual moment. This, of course, would get some further refinement as we move deeper into the project. And that's it.
Got it. The last component of this, very quickly, is the Mohawk Theater. And, you know, the Mohawk Theater, to a certain extent, as I said, it's kind of a low-hanging fruit, which is that the plans for the renovation of the Mohawk Theater, I think, were done 25 years ago. And construction actually began, I think, stopped in the early 90s. So the Mohawk Theater, you know, is there simply to be done. It just was absent the context. You know, and a first step toward that context is finishing and revitalizing Heritage Park. You know, the Mohawk Theater used to, of course, this was Main Street, probably in the, must have been the late 1930s or early 1940s. There was a Carol Lombard movie playing there. This was opening night, and that's John DeRosa in the circle up there. See that the theater was packed, and it looks pretty much like that today. I mean, Dan Sanders asked me how many it seated. I thought it was around 1,200. It has a beautiful lobby. This is what the state of destruction as they were about to begin the construction. And my proposal, my modest programming proposal, I will defer to people like Don and Joe Thompson on the programming side, except maybe for one thing, is that Dennis Hopper was a close friend of mine and a founding member of the Guggenheim Motorcycle Club. And Governor Weld remembered, reminded me this morning that Governor Weld was actually
International Vice President.
He was an international vice president. Well, Dennis was the senior vice president, and this was the founding of the Guggenheim Motorcycle Club in 1998 with Lawrence Fishburne and Jeremy Irons and Bob Geldorf and Lauren Hutton and Elton Guilfoyle, who worked for me at the Guggenheim. We did trips all over the world. Dennis Hopper was an artist in addition to being an actor. He was in 150 films. He was an incredible photographer. He was VP of the Guggenheim Motorcycle Club. And for all of you basketball fans, he was nominated for an Academy Award for his role as Shooter in the Hoosiers movie. And he was an easy rider, and he was a golfer. But anyway, our guys, our friends, wanted to do something to remember Dennis, and so we came up with the idea of an international, Dennis Hopper International Film Festival for 2 weeks in May, perhaps. So this summer, when we got together, we did a drive-by. This is the remnants of the motorcycle club coming to North Adams, and Mayor Alkenbright explained to us the history of the theater. So I think, again, if we can provide the context and we can get the theater done, we put in one piece there. There are 50 weeks to go, and I think between the Pioneer Valley and the Purple Valley, we should be able to collaborate and make the North Adams Theater a vital part of the community, because it simply is there, and you know it's not going away unless it goes away. And if the pressures result in its destruction, it would be a shame. So this might be a moment to continue to press for the renovation of the theater. Thank you.
And our governors, we thought if we brought in this kind of ho-hum vanilla version, maybe it could only get better from here. This is absolutely spectacular. I think we'd all agree. I'm sure there isn't anyone in here that doesn't have a question. However, respecting the time of our guests, we will take a few questions from our media partners. If any of the media has a question, we'll take a few questions. There'll be plenty of time, as is conceptual at this point, there'll be plenty of time to discuss it further.
And when do we have an idea of when this could start, construction could start in?
Well, I think that the steps on this are that the North Adams Partnership has undertaken to support a conceptual development study, which we're supposed to have, or plan to have finished by the end of the year. And that will be a document, which will have all of this material and much more, which kind of like lays out the concept. The next step would be to do a real plan. And that could take as short as 6 months. My group is fairly sophisticated in this sort of thing. The governor's input in terms of trains and engagement and all of that is clearly lined up. And I've been working with Richard for more than 20 years. We think we could probably produce the detailed plan, which will have all of the real numbers essentially put it out to bid. I think that could allow it to be put out to bid probably by the spring. I would think that all these buildings are simple buildings. And in my conversations with Governor Weld last night, we think that this Heritage Park project is financeable simply from the revenues that would be generated by the buildings. I mean, it sort of goes like this, is that you either believe the plan or you don't. If you believe the plan and you take the numbers of the plan, the revenue stream of the six buildings here, in terms of rents that are obligated to pay, would more than cover the cost of what needs to be done. We don't have to build it all from scratch. Governor Dukakis already did that 30 years ago. I mean, that first investment was kind of like riding here. This is fairly inexpensive, and it should be doable. Then we're going to rely on the advice of this is going to have to bring together the North Adams Redevelopment Authority. Some way or another, the state perhaps to be involved in this. I think the governor's going to advise us on that. It could be in a form of, I don't know, what form could it be? Is there a form do we have here? Do anybody has a thought?
It's all about money.
Yeah. It could be low interest loans. It could be it could be more direct. It could be guarantees. I mean, who knows? But as soon as that package comes together, I would think that it could be realized in as short as 2 years. I mean, I tend to be optimistic about those things, but I don't see that the work on the train building, the second half of the train building, would necessarily impede the construction of the content because it can start right here. And these two buildings are in excellent shape, the buildings that exist here. So I, of course, would like to see everything happen sooner rather than later. If that's the case, aim for 2018.
You want to say a word about the Global Contemporary?
Well, Global Contemporary is the same thing. I mean, we had to, that's a private funding my partner in this enterprise, Dan Arbus, is here. And, it's our plan to, once this project had been launched, and I made a brief appearance before the Airport Commission this summer about the acquisition of the lease, because before we could make the building project real, we had to get the lease. So basically, we're in a good position on the lease negotiation with the Airport Commission. We now have a kind of like a public platform for the presentation of these projects, and then that would be up to us to put that package together. That may take, just because it's a larger building, it may take a little longer. I don't know, even if they started at the same time. I don't see waiting around for these things. It's kind of like you do as soon as you can.
Charles?
Mr. Prince, yeah. We've seen major galleries in New York, like the Gagosian and Pace, do museum-level quality exhibitions. You've been a visionary in terms of developing concepts for museums. So, in the sense that this is a non-profit, and you've talked about the problem of museums not having space. ways to store things. Is part of your concept that things will be sold over time, and in that sense, is it like a gallery, and will there be a profit for the investors?
Well, I mean, the short answer is it's probably yes and no and all of the above. I mean, but it doesn't really make any difference at this particular point. I mean, you could ask the same question of Andy Hall at MassMoGA, for example. I mean, Andy Hall has a vast collection. He's made a commitment at MassMoGA to 15 years. So, theoretically, what's going to happen at the end of 15 years? You know, is he going to create his own museum? Is he going to create his own museum at MassMoGA? Is he going to sell his collection? God forbid anything happens to him. Does he give it to his children? Will they? The point is that this is an endemic problem. It kind of exists. So by putting it in a slightly different framework, it does not preclude that option. You know, it will depend on what the group that comes together to do this will want to do. And sure, parts of it could be sold, but what? I mean, is that necessarily bad? It's not like, you know, you're taking the art someplace and burning it. The idea here is that what's motivating this process is the fact that there's so much sophisticated contemporary art being made, and that the museums are relatively small compared to the cohort of the work. So, you know, there is work, like, for example, those seven or some number of the Tyrrells that are going to be installed in MassMoGA are owned by the Guggenheim. I bought them in 1991. They've never been installed. Never had the space for them. So that was 24 years ago. So 24 years ago, those works have been sitting in storage. There's no benefit to the public for that. You know, and so does it really matter if it stays indefinitely in that, or if the Guggenheim or anyone else decided that they're going to install it in MassMoGA for 15 years and then sell it after that time is over? And my point is that I think it's a kind of false dichotomy to say it has to be one or the other. The reality is you can keep the end open and you decide what you want to do with it. Works should be gifted to museums for tax purposes. Works could be sold on the market. There are all kinds of ways of dealing with this and dealing with the issues of permanency. It doesn't necessarily have to be once a work crosses the threshold into the museum, it essentially moves into some sacred territory because it's simply unsustainable. That model is unsustainable. I've been saying this for 30 years. You know, there's no imminent crash or crisis, but how do museums relieve the pressure? Well, look at New York City. The Whitney Museum built a new museum downtown, so the Whitney Museum is sold to the Metropolitan Museum because the Metropolitan Museum doesn't have space to do it. So now the Metropolitan Museum is going to have more of a presence to do contemporary art because they have another space. But even that model cannot go on indefinitely, or all of Upper Manhattan becomes an art museum. So my point here is that, you know, this is an initiative that's, and it's an idea that's valid, that's absolutely valid, is that there's a social good behind it, that the art gets out there and it gets seen. You know, how you decide what's going to happen to it in 20 or 25 years, to me, is almost irrelevant. And all of the possibilities exist. Some of the work could go to a museum. Maybe this becomes a museum. Maybe people like it and they make it a not-for-profit activity. I don't know, but it doesn't have to start out life that way. In fact, none of them did, by the way, including the Guggenheim. You know, before the Guggenheim got involved in sophisticated organizations, it was a private enterprise, you know, run by Solomon R. Guggenheim out of an automobile showroom on East 54th Street. So I've done nothing here and all of the other than think about these things and connect these dots. I've not really changed anything. And you started out by talking about Larry Gagosian, absolutely right. Larry Gagosian runs a museum, you know, from which he sells art. I mean, you know, and he does Monet exhibitions from time to time. So, you know, where's the difference? The difference is maybe the space. We have a big destination here with the Clark, MassMoGA, maybe with a few more things. My only point is that new models have to come into the, will be forced to be come into to shape or form, and this can be one of them. And is it a private initiative? Yes. What comes out of that, you know, definitely remains to be seen. We will work it out.
Thank you. We have time for one more question, Mr. Denzel.
Yeah, either the mayor or Mr. Prince. Obviously, there'll have to be lots of study of this question. Is it possible
Which question?
To kind of state what your vision is for the economic impact in terms of jobs?
I mean, I don't think we really have that nailed down yet. I mean, it's clear in Tom's presentation what he's thinking, how this could factor into jobs and the economy here with respect to the train museum. With respect to the museum and the Mohawk, I think that's still, you know, down the road to be thought through and developed. But it certainly has great potential. I think it has great potential for the residents of this area, too, as far as jobs and whatnot, particularly here within this facility. So.
Could you talk about some of the sources of data that went into supporting your ideas about the sort of visitors that this will attract? And where do the numbers come from?
Yeah, go ahead. This will be our final question. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you get into this question in an iterative way. I mean, first of all, when we started Mass MoCA years ago, when we were at a certain point by the time that hot summer day that Governor Dukakis was forced into my office and had to listen to this. Actually, it was Joe and Michael and I who basically developed the economic impact study in the late 1980s. That essentially, it's a model that I still use today, and I've done that for more than 50 projects at museums around the world. And you get that data from a variety of different sources. I mean, statistical data from the Clark Mass MoCA in terms of attendees, how long people stay here, what they do when they're here. There's some people in the economics department, Steve Shepard, I had lunch with on Tuesday, who's made this a major part of his study and research and possesses a lot of data. The tourist bureaus in Berkshire County have a lot of data. We have a certain amount of comparative data of attendance at like institutions. We've cited several of the speakers mentioned the museum in Hamburg, you know, drawing 1.2 million. I mean, so you can describe it this way: this is a model railroad train exhibition that won't be as big as ours. Ours will be more sophisticated. It's on the third, fourth, and fifth floors of a warehouse building in a former industrial district in Hamburg. And the main museum, the Hamburger Kunsthalle, which I've dealt with, has 382,000 visitors a year. So the model trains outdraws the leading museum by a factor of three. I had a similar experience in Berlin with Richard Gluckman. We made a very tiny exhibition space called the Guggenheim Berlin. And it was so small, I didn't even want to charge admission to it. We did it with Deutsche Bank. But the chairman of Deutsche Bank insisted that we charge admission. He said, if you don't charge admission, people won't think it's valuable. We averaged, in a tiny space that was about the size of this room, we averaged 180,000 visitors a year. And that was larger than the Gemälde Gallery, which was the world's greatest museum of Renaissance art. And we were commissioning contemporary art. So the thing is, what you do, you try to pull as much data as you can. It all doesn't fit into a particular framework. But if you really analyze the numbers, you know, our sense is that most of the people who come to the Clark and Mass MoCA don't stay here. You know, they drive up from South County, or they drive from wherever they do. You know, the people who stay here come for Joe's concerts because it's a 3 or 4 day concert, and you know, then you get the parking lots and the hotels are full and the restaurants are full and everything overflows. Well, that's kind of what we're shooting at, something like that. In other words, where you give people enough rationale to come here, and they have to spend a night or two nights, and you give them a wide variety of things to do, something for the kids to do. You know, not everybody, Mass MoCA is not everybody's cup of tea. But if you're here and you come to see the trains and you realize it's only a walk over to Mass MoCA, you might be inclined to walk over to Mass MoCA. And either you'd be inclined to go in, or you might just do shopping, or you might kind of like, you know, go on the two restaurants over there. I mean, it's really how you build the economic impact model. And I think that the issue here is that I can be very specific. I mean, our model now has, you know, to run the museum at the level that we think, that just the train museum, would probably employ about 63 people. The Global Contemporary, probably a third of that. Because the Global Contemporary, while it's much bigger, it doesn't have train operators and the paintings aren't breaking down, and it's a different type of experience. So you kind of like change that. So let's say that that's 20. That's 80 jobs. But if this place gets, I started out thinking maybe 150,000, less than Massimoca, but Joe persuaded me that this would outdraw Massimoca, the train concept, because the audience, if that's true, this would transform North Adams, really. Because those would be people who probably aren't coming here right now, the large bulk of them. And it's a big cohort. I mean, they're the train nuts. It's a big audience. They're the international train
nuts. Raise your hand, Governor.
back to your observation, I think for this, we're looking at, potential of, even if we're, say, 500,000, maybe that's lofty, but I don't know. But
that's
half a million.
Way too much.
What?
You're too optimistic.
All right, 250,000, but somewhat unique visitors that would come here. That's heads and beds, that's people at tables in our restaurants, it's people in our shops, and it would have that same reciprocal effect. Governor Wald last night was talking to me about the velocity of money. You want people here just pulling money out and spending money, and that's what you all would like. So I'm very thankful, as we all are, for the governors of the Caucus of Weld, Tom Krenz back here today with Richard Gluckman some 3 decades later, with great hope that they will once again leave a very lasting social and economic mark on our greater community, our greater region. I want to thank everyone for coming today. I want to thank our gentlemen for being here. Thank you all very much.
Downtown Boston. I was 23 years old.
Kitchen. And this is just an opportunity to work.
Support and work on.
John is taking a little care of